Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage, a production of the Daily Journal. All things Mississippi State and Ole Miss for the next half hour or so. Logan's on location in Oklahoma City with the Mississippi State women's basketball team. Logan, how are things going there?
It's a beautiful day here in Oklahoma City. It's my first time actually being in this part of the country, and I've nothing but good things to say about it so far. It's a really nice place. It's like a nice, clean city. Traffic's not too bad, and yeah, everything was really accessible at the arena today. We had some press conferences earlier on with Vic Schaefer and Washington as well, and you know, things went well. Your parking was great. You know, I've got all my credentials for the week, and the whole setup has been A-OK so far.
Well, we'll talk more about MSU's women here in a little bit, folks. Before we move on, want to remind you of some other podcasts to be on the lookout for from the Daily Journal. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast, all things Northeast Mississippi with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. That comes to you every Wednesday and Friday. And check out Prep Rally for all your high school sports needs with Blake Morgan and Gene Phelps every Wednesday. And Logan and I are here with you, usually on a Thursday, sometimes a Friday. Kind of depends on what's going on and where we are. We're going to have a lot to talk about in the program today. In addition to Mississippi State's women in the Sweet 16, we'll talk a little bit about the Ole Miss men wrapping up basketball in the NIT quarterfinals. We'll hit some baseball as well, as the second weekend of SEC play is upon us. Logan, first of all, let's talk about women's basketball, and kind of a big picture question to start here before we get into the details of the tournament there with the ladies. What do you think? Now, obviously, State's got it going good right now with attendance and interest in women's basketball, Logan, but what has to happen, do you think, for sustained interest in women's basketball? I'm not talking about just at MSU, but across the board. I mean, you know, as I look at it, there are just so many things competing for attention of college sports fans, and when you have people who are emotionally invested in football, men's basketball, baseball, it's kind of hard for the women's game to break in there and gain some attention unless they win at the level that we've seen Vic Schaefer and the Bulldogs win at in the last two seasons. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with you have to put a winning product on the floor, obviously. But, you know, Mississippi, this thing started building. I mean, Vic Schaefer's in his fifth season at Mississippi State. But it kind of started building about 3 years ago. Mississippi State went on a deep run in the NIT and were able to host some of those NIT games. And even late in the year that season, they started to, you know, you saw the attendance numbers start to increase there at the Hump. And it continued through last season. You know, they've made the NCAA tournament for the last 3 years. So I guess it really started about 4 years ago, the attendance surge. But, you know, they've had a winning product on the floor, like I said. And the fans just really appreciate the way his teams play. I mean, they play on both ends of the court. They get after it on both ends of the court. You don't see just a player, you know, even a player like Victoria Vivians, who scores a lot of points, and then, you know, you don't see her taking possessions off on the other end of the floor. If you don't play defense for Vic Schaefer, you're not going to play. And I think the fans at Mississippi State have really embraced this team and the way they play the game. And I think, you know, that's kind of been, like I said, it was a process to get to this level that they're at right now. Because, I mean, you've covered Mississippi State basketball, and I have too in years past. And, you know, you could have thrown a handful of rocks into the stands and never hit anybody. I mean, there's double-digit numbers, you know, in attendance for some of those games. I don't know if they've officially announced some of those numbers, but, I mean, there's less than 100 people in the crowd some of those games, especially in December when it's, you know, on Christmas break, and, you know, the students aren't there, and you know, there just wasn't a whole lot of attendance. But the attendance numbers at Mississippi State were pretty genuine this past season. They drew really, really well at the Hump, continue as long as Nick Schaefer's there. You know, and if there's a change in coaching, you know, obviously it'll be up to that coach to continue to engage the fans and continue to get them to come out.
Tell us a little bit about Vic Schaefer's experiment with the starting five. Who you think will start against Washington, and do the minutes really play out the way Schaefer says? Does everybody get kind of the same amount regardless of who's on the floor when the game begins?
I think you've seen a couple of players' minutes decrease since he changed those starting lineups 2 games ago. I mean, obviously Victoria Vivian isn't playing the same amount of minutes that she was when she was starting, but you have to kind of tip your hat to Vic Schaefer. I mean, obviously going into the NCAA tournament, you know, the biggest performance of the year, and you completely revamp your starting lineup. He started 4 new starters in the opening round of the NCAA tournament and did the same thing for the second round as well. And they scored in those games, Paris, they scored 110 points in the opening round and scored 92 points in the second round. And you have to tip your hat, because if he was to start 4 new players in that opening game and then Mississippi State gets beat in the opening round, you talk about a lot of people are going to be scratching their head and wondering, you know, what Vic Schaefer's doing. And, you know, the experiment worked, and, you know, he was asked which set of starters he was going to use for the Sweet 16 here in Oklahoma City, and he didn't want to tip his hand. He wanted to keep Washington guessing about who he's going to play. But you're going to see all 10 of those players in the game at some point. I mean, they're too important. And, you know, even when he had the original starters, that next five, that wave of five that he put into the game was really, really good, and it contributed all season long. It's a tough matchup against Washington. Obviously, Washington has Kelsey Plum, you know, the leading scorer in women's basketball history on the other team. And not only her, and, you know, she's averaging 31.8 points. That's not high. That's what she's averaging, is 31.8 points a game. And then, you know, not only do they have her, they've got Chantel Ozahor. I think I'm pronouncing her name correctly. She's leading the country in rebounding. She's averaging 15.4 rebounds a game to go along with her 15.8 points. So they're kind of got two players right there that, you know, lead the country in both scoring and rebounding. And the rest of their players aren't too shabby. They, you know, they got a couple of guards averaging nearly 10 points a game. And then their center, you know, is averaging 6.5 and 5. So, you know, kind of typical numbers there. But, you know, 4 out of their 5 players are really, really good. And Mississippi State's going to have to guard them because they're scoring the ball really, really well. They scored 108 points in their second round game against Oklahoma. And Oklahoma's a really good program. So Mississippi State's going to have their hands full here in Oklahoma City on Friday night.
So what seed is Washington? Obviously, they had to go on the road to beat Oklahoma, and I would imagine that's going to affect, to some degree, the number of people who come out there for the games in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, I think they're the 4 seed there. So, I mean, it's the 2 versus the 4, and you know, Baylor is in the other seed. So it's a good tournament, you know, and chances are Mississippi State, if they do somehow get past Washington, they will more than likely face Baylor, the number 1 seed in this region. So it's a tough road to get to the Final Four out of this Oklahoma City regional.
Hey, folks, shifting gears a little bit. Ole Miss ended basketball season Tuesday night. We're talking about the Ole Miss men in a 74-66 loss to Georgia Tech in the NIT quarterfinals. Logan, the Rebels went into that game with some momentum, having played well really in their last 4 games. Even though one of those was a loss against Arkansas in the SEC tournament in Nashville, the Rebels really pushing the Hogs in that game and having many chances to win. They had defeated Missouri in the first round. But, you know, the home just was not a safe haven for Ole Miss this season. And the Georgia Tech game was the 6th home loss of the year, doubling the number of home losses the Rebels have averaged under Andy Kennedy. And you know you're going to have trouble when the other team's center has more blocked shots than your leading scorer has points. Think about that for a minute. DeAndre Burnett went into the game averaging 16.5 points. He had 5 points on the night. Ben Lammers had 8 blocked shots in the game. And really, really kind of set the tone defensively. Burnett had really shot well in the last four games. He had hit 23 of 44 field goal attempts. We're talking from all over the floor, not just three. But he was shooting 52.2% over those four games. Now, Tech obviously did a good job protecting the rim with Lammers, who led the ACC in blocked shots. But they also did a good job of getting hands in passing lanes, tipping balls, getting strips, and just making it tough for the Rebels to drive. Burnett and the other shooters got some open looks, but they really didn't take advantage. It was good to see Sebastian Saiz end his Ole Miss career on a high note with 19 points and 15 rebounds. It was a sellout crowd at the Pavilion, an energetic crowd, really, I thought, the most engaged crowd I'd seen at Ole Miss in a home game this season. And Kennedy spoke about those six home losses, those six losses after the game. Some of those weren't real close, Middle Tennessee, Kentucky, and Georgia. And in some home wins, the Rebels had to really exert a lot of effort to come from behind, to come from behind against teams you wouldn't think they'd have to, Auburn, LSU, Tennessee. They came from 23 back to beat Auburn, and I think maybe from 15 down to beat Tennessee at home. Kennedy said he will evaluate what he's doing next year around home games to see if he can eliminate distractions. And I just thought that was an odd discussion to be hearing around basketball, Logan. I maybe wonder if the Rebels will spend the night at a hotel before a home game next year, you know, the way most football teams do. I doubt it. You know, there's so much midweek travel in basketball already. But Andy Kennedy says he's going to really focus and try to eliminate distractions around those home games next year.
Yeah, that's really weird. I mean, most teams, you know, they play well at home, and especially like Ole Miss, you know, with that brand new pavilion up there. I mean, that's a really nice arena. It's a heck of a lot better than the Dad Bad up there. So you would think that they would play well there. How did they do there last year? I know, wasn't last year the first year the pavilion was open?
Well, they are 20-7 in the pavilion, maybe 20-8 after the Georgia Tech game. So that's, you know, that's really not the percentage you would expect at home. Now you go back to the days at Tad Smith Coliseum, and you know, obviously the history of Ole Miss basketball is not long and strong, and you know, and it's bleak in a lot of points. But they've had some very good teams, and I remember, I guess it was late 90s, it was around 2000. Jim Herrick had Georgia in the NCAA tournament, and he was doing an interview, and someone had asked him about whether his team deserved a bid or something like that. But anyway, Herrick's response was to immediately begin building credentials for his team, you know, to show why they belonged in the NCAA tournament. And one of the first things he said was, well, we won a game at Mississippi, and you go back to that time frame, late Rob Evans, early Rod Barnes, Tad Smith Coliseum was a tough environment, really tough. They had a streak of like, 15 or 18 home wins at one point. Obviously, Jim Herrick thought it was a big deal when Georgia won there, and it was a big atmosphere. You know, you had Colonel Reb. I guess you could do the same thing with Rebel the Bear now, but, you know, Colonel Reb would do the rappelling down from the ceiling of Tad Smith, and you know, the streamers would fall and the students were right there. It was a really electric atmosphere. If you're going to rappel from the pavilion, you got a lot more work involved, I'll tell you that. But the atmosphere and the product on the floor were really good, and Tad Smith Coliseum for several years was a tough, tough place for visitors. All right, shifting gears, folks, let's talk baseball a little bit. Ole Miss on the road at Kentucky beginning tonight at 7 on the SEC Network. It would be nice to think that Sunday's game against Vanderbilt would mean that hitting and scoring problems were behind the Rebels. Ole Miss scored like 8 runs in the last 3 innings or so, had scored only 5 or 6 in the first 2.5 games. But against Memphis on Tuesday, they managed just 5 hits and 1 run in an 11-inning loss, 2-1 to the Tigers. Memphis swept that series. They've played twice, and the Rebels are 0-2 now. As good as pitching has been for Ole Miss, and it's been very good, with an SEC-leading 2.68 ERA. There are issues on offense right now, and it's a struggle to watch these guys try to get around the bases a little bit. It was odd at the beginning of the season when so many of these newcomers were hitting strong right out of the gate. For several games, Thomas Dillard, a freshman from Oxford, was hitting around 500. Chase Cockrell and Cole Zabowski also got off to fast starts for their college careers. And it was during that time that the veterans, Colby Bortles and Tate Blackman, were struggling. Now Bortles and Blackman have picked it up a little bit and the newcomers have fallen back. There will be a period of adjustment. You figure these new guys will hit again, and hopefully that's before the season is over. You would expect that they would improve as they become more adjusted to college pitching. As it stands, Ole Miss goes into the Kentucky series hitting just .242 as a team. No player on the roster is hitting better than .300. Will Golson leads a team right now with an even .300 average. So we'll see how they fare in Lexington. Again, game one tonight at 7 on the SEC Network. The Wildcats will start 6'11" right-hander Sean Hiley. Logan, I'm sure I'm messing this up, man. I know I'm messing this up. H-J-E-L-L-E, and I know you know who I'm talking about. He's the reigning SEC Pitcher of the Week. He had a complete game shutout at A&M last week as Kentucky swept A&M on the road. And Hiley is a sophomore from White Bear Lake, Minnesota. And it's a bit of a strange sight when you see a 6'11" guy on the mound. My high school football teammate, Ben McDonald, was an imposing sight on the pitcher's mound at 6'7". You don't see many 6'11" pitchers standing up there on that elevated spot already.
Yeah, that's really unusual. I watched some video of him earlier this season, and that's Randy Johnson type height right there. And yeah, Nick Mangione, former Mississippi State assistant, is coaching at Kentucky this year, first year there, and has had the Wildcats playing really well so far. So that'll be a good one up there in Oxford, starting I guess tonight. But Mississippi State. Struggling right now. They lost four straight ball games and went to Arkansas last week and weekend and got swept up in Fayetteville. Lost a close game 3-1 on Friday night. Arkansas hit a couple of home runs. Mississippi State hit one home run, and that was the difference in the ball game. Another great outing by Connor Pilkington, where he wasn't backed up with a whole lot of run support. And that's kind of been the scenario for him most of the season. He's pitched it really, really well. And going into this weekend against Tennessee, he's the only starter that they've named for the weekend. Those next two starting spots are back open at TBA in there. You know, I don't know how they're going to throw TBA on back-to-back days, but they are. And
he's a beast.
He better get his arm loose. Yeah, he better get his arm loose. And he's got one of those rubber arms because you see him pitching a lot, man, here in Tennessee. But Mississippi State goes up to Arkansas last week, let's say, 3-1 on Friday night. They lost a one-run ball game on Saturday, 5-4, and then they lost 6-1 on Sunday. That's the same Arkansas team, Parrish, that Mississippi State finished off the regular season with a year ago and swept them. Mississippi State only lost one series the entire season last year, and, they come right out of the gate and get swept. So, they've got some ground to make up. They fell behind Southern Miss the other night at Trustmark Park. They played Tuesday night. Fell behind by a deep deficit early on in that ball game. Battled back there at the end, but still came up short. Lost that one 7-5. So they face Tennessee at home in the SEC home opening series this weekend. Tennessee's playing really well. They're 13-5 right now. Mississippi State's sitting at 12-10. And really, right now, the story for Mississippi State is just all the injuries that they've had. A lot of them have been to the pitching staff. I think they've got seven players that have had Tommy John surgery. Right now, they just lost another pitcher, Ryan Sear. He was been dismissed from the team for violation of team rules. Hunter Stovall's going to be out this weekend. Ryan Rigby's going to be out this weekend. Blake Smith's going to be out this weekend. Eli Marrero is still going to continue to be out this weekend. So Mississippi State, that staff is really depleted right now. And Kenny Canizero had to suspend Jake Mangum Tuesday night against Southern Miss for a violation of team rules. He's expected to be back this weekend. And right now, it's a lot of change at Mississippi State. First-year coach Kenny Canizero, so they've got the, I guess, go through weather the storm. It's going to be one of those rebuilding years, and it doesn't look too promising for Mississippi State right now until they can get things figured out in their starting pitching and in their bullpen.
You know, Logan, I've asked many times for a list of those team rules so we can have an idea what we're up against when the violations come. I mean, nobody wants to give out a list of team rules, though. So, anyway, folks, talking a little spring football now. Hugh Freeze says his players aren't playing slow necessarily as they installed new systems on both offense and defense, but he thinks they'll be a lot faster at the end of spring drills. Right now, he says he can see hesitancy in quarterback Shea Patterson as he sets the offense before he calls for the ball. By and large, things seem to be going well with installing the offense of new coordinator Phil Longo. The offensive line appears to be farther ahead than any other group. Junior guard Javon Patterson told us this week that the blocking schemes were very similar and that only the verbiage and names of things were different. Running back Jordan Wilkins, who is eager to get back on the field after sitting out last season because of an administrative error relating to academics, basically said the same thing. There are a lot of similarities with what the Rebels were already doing. Well, there have to be some differences, and I suspect we'll see those as the season unfolds. If doing the same thing, if there were no differences, if the same thing was working, Hugh Freeze would not have made a change at offensive coordinator. And speaking of coordinator Dan Werner, Freeze's lead offensive assistant for 5 years, has been hired in an off-field capacity at Alabama as an offensive analyst. Freeze said he has remained in contact with Werner and basically helped him get the job. You know, he was a reference, so he got a phone call, he spoke about him, and, you know, if he didn't help him, he at least didn't hurt him. Now, Freeze says this isn't a big deal, but Ole Miss fans will remember Tyler Siski, who left Ole Miss to take the same analyst position at Alabama several years ago. And the next time the Rebels and Crimson Tide played in the 2013 season in Tuscaloosa, Freeze suffered the first shutout of his career in a 25-0 loss. Both Freeze and Nick Saban downplayed Siski's significance after the game, but Siski was seen on camera in the press box with Alabama coaches as he watched Ole Miss through binoculars. The next week, Saban said Siski didn't talk to anybody during the game, and maybe that's true, but self-imposed silence in close quarters with coworkers for 4 hours seems a little bit odd. So Alabama, for a second time, has hired an offensive coach at Ole Miss in an off-field administrative capacity, and we'll see what that does for the Crimson Tide. So about 2 weeks in the books for Ole Miss spring training. Logan, we're getting kind of near the end. Grove Bowl coming up on April the 8th.
Yeah, and you know, for Mississippi State, it's I really don't know a whole lot to tell you, honestly, because I've seen Mississippi State stretch for about 20 minutes about 2 weeks ago. I've seen you since I've seen Mississippi State practice football, so I really don't have a whole lot to say. I missed several days of practice and workouts and stuff, missing some more this week, and you know, even though I'm in Oklahoma City, I'm not missing much because Dan Mullen has closed spring practices this week, including the scrimmage on Saturday. Mississippi State's supposed to scrimmage for the first time this spring on Saturday inside the stadium, and he's closed it. It's the first time in Dan Mullen's 9 years that he has ever closed a spring scrimmage. And, yeah, I don't know what they're putting in or what he doesn't want us to see, but it's closed to the media, closed to the public. And, yeah, they're really not getting a whole lot of looks at Mississippi State. Only two practices have been able to actually watch any of it. And they were basically doing stretching and a couple of individual drills, and I only was able to attend one of those practices. And, yeah, that was it. So you're really just going off. It's kind of like fall camp. You know, when fall camp gets here, you know, practices are closed. You really have to go off of what coaches and the players are telling you. And, you know, it's a lot of coach speak right now. I do know Mississippi State's trying to work in a new center. Don't have anybody on the roster that's ever snapped a football in a college football game. And they've got a few guys working there. Martinez Rankin is reportedly working there. Harrison Moon is reportedly working there. they'd like to get Elgin Jenkins and Deion Calhoun in that mix too. But both of those guys are out this spring or limited this spring with some injuries. So you really don't know who's practicing where and all that kind of stuff. Don't really know how this new defense that Todd Grantham's putting in. Don't know how it looks. So it's I'll be just as surprised as some of the fans on if the spring game is open and I'll be able to see the team and what they're actually doing. So. I'll get a first look kind of when the same time a lot of the fans do.
So a lot of government secrets down there with Mississippi State football. Hey, folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage. We appreciate you for clicking in and being part of the program. I want to remind you about some other podcasts to check out. Be sure to take a look for The Memo, our news podcast, all things Northeast Mississippi, with Brad Locke and Derek Russell coming to you every Wednesday and Friday. And also check out Prep Rally for all your high school sports needs every Wednesday with Blake Morgan and Gene Phelps. And Logan and I will be back with you next week for another edition of Double Coverage.